The Living Clean podcast is not affiliated with Narcotics Anonymous, nor do we speak on behalf of NA as a whole. We are simply members sharing our personal experiences and perspectives in recovery-based discussions. The opinions expressed here are our own and not those of Narcotics Anonymous as a fellowship. This is the Living Clean podcast. This podcast is not meant to replace meetings, sponsorship, step work, or service. This podcast is meant to be another tool in your recovery toolbox. Our guests are here to share their experience, strength, and hope with recovery through Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for joining us. All right, welcome back to the Living Clean podcast. Mason S., I'm an addict. Back for another episode. It's not necessarily a personal share, but we're going to have a conversation with our guests today. We'll allow them to introduce themselves here in just a second. But first, the co-host with the most, Francis.
I'm Francis, and I'm an addict, and my clean date is December 22nd, 1992. And my home group is You Are the Book Book Study, meets on Tuesday and Thursday mornings from 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. So I am just like less than a half an hour away from our circle up and closing. So I'm still pretty juiced up from our book study. Yeah.
And which you're discussing the 11th step right now.
We are talking about the 11th step. It's been really powerful.
Awesome. Okay. And now we will allow our guest to introduce themselves.
I'm an addict. My name is Ruben. My clean date is March 4th, 1993. And my home group is a clean and free group in the Central Texas area. It's the oldest NA meeting in Central Texas area.
Awesome. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Ruben, for coming and hanging out with us for a little bit.
Yes, it's an honor. An honor, like I said, yeah. It's an honor, guys. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you guys are doing. I believe it's another avenue in which we get the word out, right? We get the message out. So thank you for your service.
Thank you for saying that. Francis, so tell us about Ruben and how Ruben got on your radar.
Well, we're in the 11th step in my little home group meeting. I met Mason at the World Convention, and somehow we start talking, and for whatever reason, he thought that I might be interesting to bring into the podcast. And so, I've been kind of like seeking out, different ideas within Narcotics Anonymous. I'm trying to listen and be creative about the podcast. And is it God's will? Is it my will? I'm not sure, but like, I'm trying to listen to the voice, you know, like that comes to me. So this was kind of like a throwback. I was NCCNA, Northern California Convention, Narcotics Anonymous. I'm the history and archives chair for the regional subcommittee. And we present history at NCCNA. And so I'm hitting the main speaker meetings. And some of the speakers I've already heard before. And I'm not trying to say that they weren't good speakers. But Sunday morning, I'm in this meeting and I'm listening to the speaker. And then he starts sharing. It was really powerful. His share was powerful. But when he started talking about NA history, my ears popped up, you know, and we have like this little chihuahua at home. And then when he hears something, like his ears stick up. And so that's what happened to me. You know, like all of a sudden he's talking about this guy that has passed away that had a profound impact on his life. And so I even started listening even more, you know, Sunday morning, you know, like you've been up late. I didn't even know how people can be spiritual Sunday morning. You know, I'm fouled out. You know, like I think that's probably the hardest task for speakers, to be the spiritual speaker on Sunday morning. I think it's more of a Friday morning thing than a Sunday, after having no sleep and listening to newcomers all weekend and all that. But so when I came across Ruben, and you know, like, and he said, "Oh yeah, I spoke at that your guys' convention." I'm like, "Oh my God, you're that guy. We got to have you on." And so that's why we're here with Ruben now. So that's your intro, Ruben. And welcome to the Living Clean podcast.
Thank you for those beautiful, kind words. I'm just like, I'm overwhelmed. If the audience could see my face right now, I'm almost in tears. And they probably will come as I begin to speak about this portion of my recovery. Thank you.
Let's touch on what you were just talking about for a second, Francis. Ruben, what's your thoughts on this my will versus God's will? You know, it was always, you know, my belief is that the program at certain times allows those two to match up. Now, for me, it's hard to stay on that path constantly where my will is always lined up with God's will. But what's kind of your belief on that? Do you think we reach a point to where we are much closer when our wills get closer to God's will, or how do you feel about that?
Let me begin by saying that I believe that they begin to line up. And our literature speaks to that they begin to line up at some point. And today, I don't know that I have a handle on it, but I do have what I use as my judgment. And that's the space that I live in, the quiet. And I call it the quiet because it's easier to describe that. When I'm still and I'm quiet, then I'm able to hear my higher power's presence more readily. And it's in that practice that when I take the pause and I practice in the quiet, that I become better at listening to it. And so that's my take on God's will, my will. And that's a tough one. It's a tough one, you know, on tough days when things aren't going my way or the way that I think they should be going, that I find myself in a level of stress that I react still at times from the corner where I came from. And it's in that space that I find the place where I was speaking to my sponsor about this the other day. I was talking about, because I just celebrated 32 years clean, and we were talking about the day or the few days that led up to that event where I decided I needed help. And I remember praying this prayer. I'm in the Salvation Army, rolled up in some cardboard boxes, and I remember praying this prayer. I said, "Get me out of here. Please come get me out of here." And we were talking about that, and we were talking about how we'll revisit that prayer over and over again, especially in the sixth step. So that's kind of my take on if that makes any sense, you know.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. Francis, what do you think?
Well, I was listening, like what you were saying about, please get me out of here. And that was some of the content of what we were sharing today, was like the nature of our prayers changing. You know, maybe it changes when we get clean and all of a sudden we're asking for stuff, you know, like, oh, this is what I need and this is what I want. And versus, you know, like now I feel like, man, I'm like, I have like this full dumpster in my head, and, you know, like, rather than asking for more stuff, is like trying to unload the dumpster, you know, like trying to get some freedom, you know, asking God for some freedom from more stuff, you know, like, man, you know, like I got a car payment, and, you know, like, and I have a job that I try to do well in, and all this stuff that like causes me stress, and you know, like, which is all just static. And like, how do I tune this radio in and get past all the stuff that I pile on myself. And so like the prayer is more about surrender and freedom today, just like you were saying, how do I get out of this? And it's like, it's not even like my life. I'm not trying to get out of my life. You know, like I'm not homeless wrapped up in cardboard in my life. I'm homeless wrapped up in cardboard in my fucking head. and that's like the prayer now is to get out of my head in the, you know, like, and the dumpster that I'm living out of there. So that's what I was thinking about. He's like, where am I at 32 years clean? I have 32 years too. And class of 92 though. And that's a dig at Mason. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, like that's, you know, like my life is so much better, but like the stuff that's in my head hasn't changed that much. So, yeah.
Chase and I had a discussion one time and we kind of broke it down. I think it may be like this in the Living Clean. Don't get me lying though. I don't know for sure, but I know we were in the beginning of our Living Clean book study and we were talking about the difference between God's will, my will, and self-will, like three different entities. I guess for me, like my will is kind of like getting tuned in to what I was meant to do. But then I have self-will that gets in the way, you know, like when self-will runs riot, it takes me off the path between those two. So the more that I work this program, the more I get self out of the way and it allows God's will and my will to kind of get closer. And so we got really deep into that conversation for a while. I think we confused a bunch of people, but it kind of made sense to us. But anyways, Ruben, where'd you grow up, man?
Grew up in San Antonio, Texas. And we moved from San Antonio to Austin when I was 10. And I got clean in the same city where I used, which was Austin. And yeah, I got clean here. I like I said earlier, I've been living on the street for a while, man. The depth of the disease had brought me to that place. And so I got clean here. And Narcotics Anonymous, let me begin by saying that was the only place I've ever gone. I've never been to any of the other A's except Narcotics Anonymous. And I was brought back by addicts and it's the old timers, the guys that were here before me, the guys that I ran with that were, and the guy who ended up sponsoring me in the beginning was the catalyst for me. There was something about my childhood that I loved history. And that brought me to listening to the guy's talk and to his talk about the history of NA. And I gravitated to that. I think more than anything, and service. I gravitated to service for some reason. Oh, I know why. I mean, I come from the street, so I had low self-esteem, low self-worth. And there was something about service that looked attractive to me that when I participated or when I watched my friends participate in it, I thought, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that. I tell a story that I had about 6 months clean and I had a roommate who had more time than me. Like I said, I believe the higher power knew exactly what I needed when I needed it because he put me right in the middle of these guys. And these guys were true NA members and they were all doing service to Narcotics Anonymous. Now, at 6 months clean, I'm just starting to awaken more to the fact that there were pretty girls in the meetings than anything. And then, you know, service, man, service was something that I gravitated to. By then, I was carrying two different, the home group that is my home group again, that group and another group, I was carrying two coffee pots in my trunk of my car, my first NA car, right? The guys that I hung out with said, come on, we're going to area. And I said, what's area? And they said, come on, come with us. You'll stay clean for the next couple of hours. Come on with us. And I was like, all right, let's go. So I thought we were going to go do something different. I didn't know what to expect. So we get in the car and we drive over to area meeting. It's on a Sunday, and the guys get out of the car and they both grab their briefcases. And when they grabbed their briefcase, I was like, oh man. In my head, I was like, oh, I gotta get me one of those. Just to so I can have one, so I can be like them. And then we walked into the meeting, and one of them is the policy person, the other one is the facilitator of the meeting, the area chair is what we called them back then. And so I was like, oh, I definitely gotta get me one now. And my mom, man, I love my mom. She said, come on, we're going to the flea market on Saturday. Will you take us to the flea market? And I said, of course. I said, you know if they got briefcases there? And she goes, oh yeah, they got a whole row of briefcases there. So I got my first briefcase at the flea market. So, next area, next month, they come and they say, hey, look, we're going to area. You want to go? And I said, oh yeah. I said, wait a minute. And I went and grabbed my briefcase and I got in the car, and they both looked at me and just shook their head like, oh, what did we create now?
Oh,
Not
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, so what was your impressions of the area meeting? Was it a good experience?
Yes. Yes. I was so enamored by how we organize. I did not know that it took that level of organization, and I'd been in nothing involved in any kind of anything like that. Like I said, I come from the street, man. I came right off the block, man, from underneath a bridge, man, on a good day. And so to me, all of that was fascinating and intriguing and motivating and exciting to me. So I had a different experience than people do sometimes,
Yeah. No, I mean, for me personally, it opened up my eyes to, oh wait, we're not just, 'cause I'm from a small town. So I thought NA just consisted right here and this the one little meeting that we had found something that nobody else had, and then when you go to that first area, it's like, oh wait, a bunch of people are doing this. We're a part of a region. That's a part of a zone. That's a part of this whole worldwide fellowship. And it was just eye-opening for me that hey, there's something to this Narcotics Anonymous thing. It's not just working here in my little small town. It's working for addicts everywhere. I thought that was fascinating, and yeah, I had a good experience too when I went. I can relate so much to wanting to be involved, and yeah, I just envisioned myself having a position one day that I could be contributing somehow.
The incredible thing again, like what I was talking about, that whole period of time was very special for me. And there was a couple of things that were beginning to happen in our area that was incredible, and I was at the right at the cusp of that. We had the guy I ended up asking to sponsor me at the time was real involved. Like I said, he actually was sponsored by Bobby Raymar out of California, who was the first World Service Conference chair. Bobby had a lot of influence in a lot of areas, him and his wife. And I knew Bobby for a short time. I met him. He's actually the only person that I let smoke in my house. The only person that's ever smoked in my house, and I've been in my house 25 years. And so that tells you something that I raised a little boy in recovery, man. And he came and he stayed here with us because we had him come speak at an event, and we took him to death row. I'm telling you, the guy that sponsored me in the beginning had a great influence on the history of what NA was. And hanging out with him and going places and driving. We would drive 4 hours to a penitentiary to go do H&I, only to turn, maybe share 10 minutes. And the AA speakers would do the whole 30-minute session, hour session. They'd give us 10 minutes because they didn't believe we were a viable resource. They didn't believe in us then. And so we made a commitment that we would go whenever we were asked, that we were going to go, we were going to be there, we were going to show up, and we were going to try to show up in numbers. So that way the message would be clear. And we had the opportunity to do that. And so sometimes we'd drive 4 hours, like I said, chair for 10 minutes, and not all of us would get to share. Maybe just one of us. Maybe two of us if we could squeeze them in. And then turn around and drive back 4 hours. But we committed to that. And we had just split from the original region, which was Lone Star. And my sponsor was the facilitator at the time. And he was the one that orchestrated. Well, he understood the service structure. There were a few of us that understood the service structure, like those guys that I ran with. So we split the region from the Lone Star region and became the Tejas Bluebonnet region. I was there when we named it. I had 9 months clean. I was at the beginning of all of that. So I was actually the facilitator for PR at 9 months clean for a cycle until they selected somebody that had more experience. Yeah.
So those trips during going to H and I, you were talking about, you would have to drive 4 hours. What I tell a lot of people, some of the great things about service is it's always great to go carry the message, but those car rides are just like it's so special to, and you talk about like getting intimate with people. I had some of my most intimate conversations on those long rides to do H and I or to be involved in any type of service. Do you have the same experience?
By far, man, those were the things that bonded us. There was a group of us guys that we were bonded by those experiences, man. And we carried that with the other people that we ended up introducing to that experience also. And so there would be different cars going different places at different times. And it was always when we would ride to conventions here in the state of Texas, Texas is kind of big. And
Big state.
it take us 6 hours to go to Texarkana, which was a smaller NA community, but we would go there and help them set up their convention because we'd get there early and there'd be 4 or 5 carloads. We'd drive up there. Matter of fact, one Saturday morning, Joe Proctor came and sat with us, and I said, "Who's that guy?" And I was talking to my sponsor. They were outside smoking, and I said, "Who is that guy?" He said, "That's Joe Proctor. He helped write some of the literature. He helped orchestrate some of it." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah. He got loaded and is trying to come back. And he had like 2 years clean at the time, somewhere around there." And he was in coveralls. I always remember this. He was in coveralls with a baseball cap on, and he was kind of scruffy looking. And he was living out in Arkansas somewhere, out in some ranch or something like that. Man, I remember that distinctively, not knowing what he had done, not really knowing till later on, understanding that. Just all of those experiences, I tell people, and I don't know that I can make enough, that I have the vocabulary to describe enough that the experience that I was put into in that moment of time, like that experience right there. And it preceded me, and it always has preceded me over and over throughout my years, how I end up in those situations, I'm honored by the experience. I'm honored to be able to share that with you guys today. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for this experience. It's not much you can get. You're not able to tell these things in a speaker meeting, right? You're not able to share these things in that kind of setting, but this is a perfect setting for some of this, right?
I think about some of the times I've met some of the people from the Narcotics Anonymous history when I was new. And like, I had no idea, like who I was meeting at the time. For instance, in 99, I was the chair of an H&I and PI learning day. And there was a guy from my hometown that says, oh, yeah, my sponsor has a story in the basic text. We should try to get him to be a speaker. And like, I didn't know that it was a big deal, you know, like to have Bob Barrett at our event. And so he comes up and he, you know, like he has a great share you know, like it wasn't that big. Like I wish I had gotten him to sign my basic text, or, you know, like I did buy a book. He was selling these books out of the back of his vehicle, his trunk. And there was the Bob Stone's book. So like I bought an original Bob Stone book, My Years with Narcotics Anonymous. And I held on to that for like 20 years and I never read it until the pandemic, you know, like when I had a greater appreciation for the history of Narcotics Anonymous. But, you know, like there was another time where we had Gene Haig, who has a story in the Little White Book, come and share. And like he was only supposed to share for like 45 minutes to an hour. And he shared for like 2.5 hours. And I did not value that time. You know, like, he had cleared, like we were supposed to have a dance afterwards. He had cleared the whole facility. It was down to like 5 people. He like out talked everybody. And I should have been in the room soaking up the history. And instead, I was losing my mind that he was talking so long. You know, like, we're supposed to be starting this dance. You know, like I was in my head about it and not listening to this, you know, predecessor, you know, like that we were so privileged to have at our event. And like the 5 or 6 people that were still there, they recognized the value of having this guy there, and the, you know, the masses of Narcotics Anonymous left. And like, I wish I'd have a redo in these moments. And I, you're like, and so today I try to value that more, you know? So yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Like, I'm like, oh, Joe Proctor. Very cool.
Yeah. I don't know. There were many times that talking about Bob, again, I was a single parent, and, I knew there was a time where I fell in love with somebody and it didn't work out. And I knew that it affected my son in a negative way. And so I made a commitment to myself that I would stop doing that. And as a result of that, we ended up hosting people that were coming to town. And, you know, we hosted Bob Barrett. We had him come speak at our home group and a different group at the time. And a guy had moved here from California. He knew him. And so he got him to come out and come out and share. And Bob Barrett came out to share. And we had George Houlihan, Mary, and Bob share that evening at that event. And Bob stayed with us. He stayed with me for 4 days. And it was me and my son. And my son, I was coaching basketball at the time. And he was like 16, I want to say 16, 15 years old. And he had a tournament on Saturday. And so I got video because I would take video of him playing ball. And I got a video of Bob Barrett waving and cheering my son on at the basketball tournament. Wow. That evening we came back to my house. We grabbed some of the cake left over from the event after he shared, and some of the women of the program wanted to come and get their book signed, like you talked about. And so they came and had their book signed. And he asked me, he said, hey, Ruben, you want me to sign something for you? And I said, yeah. And I didn't want to be rude, so I reached over and my Just for Today set up my coffee table. And I handed him my Just for Today. I had not realized that the excerpt from his story is on my clean day.
Mm.
He signs it and then hands it back to me. And I open it and I said, Bob, that's on my clean day, Bob. And he just kind of looked at me. And I remember the look on his face when he looked at me. And again, man, here I am again. Here I am again. I was put right there. Why was I put there? And I know that's the stuff that the power greater than ourselves puts us in places of that space, right? And there in that lies the quiet for me, right? When I can capture that, there's a quiet about that, that I know that I was doing God's will that moment, right? So every year, man, when I celebrate clean time, I think about that day. And I still have that book. Yeah.
What a great story. That is so cool. It's just like these little small affirmations, these confirmations that we're on the right path, you know. And it doesn't have to be some great big burning bush moment. It's just little small, what p some people would call coincidences. I don't believe it's coincidence at all. Yeah.
No,
It's
not at all.
fascinating how that happens.
Yeah. Again, man, I've been given that privilege. I've been given that honor. For me, it's an honor, man. I know that we talked, me and Francis talked about the discovery when he heard me talk about George. And I can't reach it from here, but there's something over at my desk here that I wanted to be wearing. It was something that his wife gave me when he passed away. And we're coaching basketball. Like I said, man, it was a big thing. I became the delegate, the regional delegate for my region at 7 years clean. Let me say this, that I was the first Hispanic to do that in our region. Even though we were Tejas Blue Bonnet region, I was the first Hispanic to do that. And so it was an honor. It was an honor to be able to carry our vote that way, right? The conscience of our region. And going to the World Service Conference and participating in that and all of that, and then getting done with that. So I come home and my sponsor said, "Man, it's time for you to raise your son and just be dad." And so I got involved with my son, man, and I was coaching basketball and football, doing all those things with him. And George had retired. He had a stroke. He couldn't do his perform at the level he was performing at anymore, and he retired. And then his wife's sister lived in Austin, and so they moved here. And right away, as soon as I heard he was moving here, I made sure that I reached out to him and let him know. And he already knew me. She actually knew me because when I went to the conference, she said, "You're the delegate from Tejas Blue Bonnet, the alternate delegate." And I said, "Yes." She goes, "Have you gotten your notebook?" And I said, "No, I haven't gotten nothing. I was selected and I haven't received anything from you guys. I just got on, made it here, the delegate's here, blah, blah, blah." And she said, "Here, give me a minute." And she gave me my first. There used to be notebooks back then, like these three-ring binders, huge binders. And she gave me all the stuff that I was going to need for the conference that weekend, that week. And so we had already knew each other. And they moved here, and I reached out to them. The following Saturday, he comes walking in to the little tournament that we were in, basketball game that we were in. And he had a limp. He was paralyzed from half of his body. He had a limp and he had a crutch. And him and his wife come walking in. It's 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, man. He came in to make sure to support me and my son and one of the other guys that he sponsored. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm on the sideline. I'm not even paying attention anymore. And I'm on the sideline and I'm thinking, how does this happen, man? Here's a guy who was a director of World Services, Narcotics Anonymous, at my son's basketball game. And that's a testament to who he was. who George was and the way the character that he had.
Yeah, it's a great testament to the program too. Like that is, I mean, that's what NA is all about. That's that action right there encompasses what our spiritual program is all about. You know, we show up for each other and we're there for each other, and you know, we don't do it for the glory or the glamour. We just it just becomes instilled in us. It's a part of what we do, and all that. You know, adopting those traits all come from those, like those little car rides you were talking about, going and doing H and I and little things like that. And you build these bonds with people and you want to be there for them. They're like their family. I mean, that's really what it is. We talk about that all the time about how, you know, I have a new family now. This is my family. And that's what family does. We're there for each other and we show up for each other. It's such a beautiful thing.
I think that, like in the Guiding Principles book in Tradition 3, it talks about welcome as a spiritual principle. And, so I think that you were talking about making sure that you reached out to him when he moved to your community. And a lot of times we think about like welcome as a spiritual principle that only goes to the newcomer. But, I'm always on the lookout for anybody that is not familiar to me. Like in a meeting, so out of town visitors, like an old timer that might be there, that might be visiting family. Anybody that's not familiar, I'm trying to welcome into Narcotics Anonymous. But it's also, like a beautiful thing to be welcoming, and engaging when you're from out of town. And so that was what I was thinking. It was maybe you made him feel welcome and he's like returning the same type of energy you extended to him. Maybe he knew that you were involved with service and that you were a regional delegate and like having a kindred spirit in the community that he can engage with that might have like the same level of knowledge of the service structure could be something. We had a an author, one of the author of the story, The Point, the sixth edition came up from, he was living at the Bay in the Bay Area at the time, and he was a main speaker at one of our events. And boy, he was, a lot of times you'll get a speaker that'll just come to speak and then bounce out. He came up for the whole event. He brought a whole entourage of people to our community. He spent money at the event. He ate with us. He didn't try to escape to go somewhere else to eat. It was like I was so impressed with how he treated us. And like the opportunity to engage in our community. And so that kind of sounds like the same type of energy. And my hope is that, like if I'm ever out of town, just being a visitor somewhere, I can engage with the same type of energy when I'm a visitor somewhere too. So.
Yeah, you just did, Francis. You just recently did, in Alabama. Yep. So I'm curious. I always like to hear people's process with the steps. How was that when you were first getting started? You know, you got a sponsor, and then what did step work look like? Did you do a lot of writing? I know back in what, 92, was the step working guide out yet? Did you use a step working guide or have your own?
Now, it's funny that you asked that because the guy that sponsored me in the beginning, my first sponsor, really that poured into me my first 10 years clean. He poured into me and his sponsor was Bobby Raymar.
Yeah.
And so we passed out leaflets of all 12 steps, and that's what we used.
Awesome.
And those were that's what I got clean on. We used the 4-step writing guide out of the 4-step booklet,
Yeah.
and God, that thing was long. It was long, but it was what I needed at the time. No doubt. It served a purpose. It served a great purpose. The leaflets were powerful, and I still have some. I still use them sometimes. When guys have run through the step working guide a few times, and I'll give them something fresh and run them through the leaflet steps, you know. And they're like, "Where did this come from?" And I'm like, "This is what we used in the beginning, man. This is what we handed out to each other. This was the what we use." So, yeah, the step writing process we wrote, we look, man. And back then, we would tell you read for 30 days in a row. If you miss a day, start over. And some guys even got 90-day assignments, man. And you know, luckily, I only got the 30-day assignment. But I can tell you this, that in my first set around the steps, I never missed a day. I pride myself on that because it was important to me. Like I said, I came from off the corner, man. I did not want to go back. I did not want to go back. Yeah, so that was the process for me. Incredible experience and journey through the 12 steps that changed. The transformation was evident. Just in not only in the way that I lived, but the way that I reacted, you know, how I navigated, and how that was what I was going to use moving forward in service, because it was that what I was needing to use to be a service, to be a proper vessel in service. Let me say that.
Yeah, I remember an insert. I can't remember. We were actually looking at, it was actually going through an approval draft. And you know how approval drafts, I don't know if they're still like this, but they each of them have a line, right? And a number. We were going through that one time, and I seen this little quote that said, "We don't," it says, "We don't do service to get clean. We get clean to do service." And I thought that was fascinating. That's what stuck out when you said, "I didn't know that I would take this step work into service," but that's the whole point, you know? And that's what I tell people all the time. I was like, "You want to know the big secret to treating addiction? You work the steps to a place that gets you in a position to become a vessel to ultimately carry the message or to be of service to others." And that's the medicine. That is the medicine. And then sometimes, guess what? We self-will comes back in, and then we start working on ourselves again, get self out of the way so that we can be selfless in service. It's not, you know, like service-based recovery, you know, that's a term that you hear a lot. And it's that's really backwards to me because it's about doing the work on myself so I can be of service, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. We had a guest on the other night. I think it was the Academic Addict who talked about coming in for a little bit. He kind of got what he needed from the fellowship and then went away for what, 10 years, Francis, or something like that. And then when he gets back involved, his sponsor's like, "You just came in and robbed us. Like you came in and took what you needed. And you didn't give it away to anybody. No wonder there's chaos in your life. No wonder you found yourself back here." You know, that's one of the most selfish things you can do is come in, take what you need, and then not give it to anybody else, you know? And so that was his re when he refocused his, you know, his rededicated himself to a program of recovery, you know, he never forgot that and focus became more focused on service. I thought that was fascinating.
I think service kind of like served a purpose in my life before, you know, like really soaking in the purpose of the steps, like realizing that the whole point is to be of service. You know, like service just kept me busy and out of my head. You know, like I got involved with a lot of service, and so I don't really care, you know, like what your motive is. You know, like maybe you have some service-based recovery. At least you're staying busy and not getting loaded. But you know, like I think in the end, the whole point is to get out of yourself, be an instrument of your higher power's will, and that is the purpose. You know, like the having a purpose-driven life life is to help other people. And I think that like normal people maybe have that instinctively, but addicts, you know, like really have to work hard to get to that point. So because of the nature of our self-centered disease.
Do you guys feel like though, like when you do service for the wrong reasons, that it brings about burnout faster? Like you get burnt out on service because your motives were never like, you get this good feeling like the first time you go in and do H&I, but when you keep that same commitment every week for like 6 months, a year, 2 years, you know, if the only purpose is to chase that feeling that you get from it, then that slowly fades away. But if your motivation has shifted to a place of gratitude, where I'm grateful that I get that they allow me to do this, and this is like, I feel like I'm repaying a debt to Narcotics Anonymous for saving my life. Like, I feel like when my mindset shifted, like service, I don't get burnt out on service anymore. Like, I'm grateful just to be considered to be a person that can go in and carry a message. Like, what an honor that is. Rather than when I first did it, I thought, oh, this is so cool. You know, I blew my chest out and I was like, I got to go in and share a message. But like when you like keeping that mindset, it slowly becomes like I slowly began to burn out. But when it shifted and I started to realize that what a gift it is to be able to do this and how grateful I am, I haven't found myself in a place of burnout in a long time since my mindset shifted. How do y'all feel about that?
So I was listening to Ruben towards the beginning of the conversation that we were having about area service. And I remember going for my first time and seeing these guys up in front of the room, the chair and the vice chair, and like, I'm going to be that guy someday. And, you know, like, so, like each time I've been area chair, I've been area chair four times in the 32 years I've been clean. And it's a different lesson. And sometimes it's about like, I've arrived. Maybe the first time I was area chair, I've arrived. Like, this is the realization of my prayer. I think the second and third time is like, what did I pray for? You know, like, and maybe, and then the fourth time was a time where I really felt like we had a fire that burned down one of the cities in our community. And I was in a position like this is, I was the vice chair. And, you know, like I, in something super traumatic happened to our community, and I really felt like I was picked to be of leadership in that moment, and probably had like the most experience being area chair at the time of the people that were around. And so so like I felt like it was more God's will, and being grateful for the opportunity to be of service. So every time is different, and sometimes the lesson is burnout. And so, or sometimes the lesson is finding gratitude in the moment. I always feel like I have to be creative and grateful. You know, like this, like being a part of this podcast, like I feel like it's an extension of having gratitude and creativity and being curious and being led into the next thing. And it is, I know it's not tied to the service structure, but I do think it is carrying the message. So I have to pull in the spiritual principles while I'm being of service, or it's not meaningful. Thanks.
No doubt, it gets difficult at times. One of the signs for me that I've done this too long is that uncomfortableness or that uneasiness that, oh, it ran its course and I need to do something different. And I need to allow somebody else to do what it is that I'm supposed to be doing. And I need to be doing something else. That's, and so it's always been that way for me. I'm the delegate again for my region. And it was a long time and things have changed. And it's exciting for me today. The guiding principles has been my theme lately is creative action of the spirit. And Jimmy talked about that in another look. The first time that we see that is when Jimmy talked about that in another look. And after talking to a friend of mine at the office, he said there were five other people that actually helped write that, but he wrote part of that, and other people contributed to that pamphlet. And we see it in the guiding principles a couple of times, a few times, right? But in the second tradition, and again in the fourth tradition, it talks about creative action of the spirit in service. And when I can grasp that if I can convey that to whatever it is that I'm doing, that if I can channel that to hopefully to plant the seed for somebody else to believe that that lies inside of them too, that I'm no special person, I'm nobody special, because Jimmy said w that it's available to us all. That this is available to us all. It's do we get in touch with that portion of our spirit, of the power greater than ourselves that's at work here, and the action behind what it is that we're doing, if it's creative. And today we know that creative action takes on a lot of different meanings. So I gotta be prepared for the next generation of addicts that are coming in, because they're changing the fellowship. It's changing in the way that we have never seen before, any of us that are here. And we've seen people that are coming in with 5 years clean that don't even know what region is or what area is, because they got clean on the screen, or had that experience, right? And now we're playing catch up to try to teach or try to mentor what we're calling fellowship development, which we used to say, hey, get in the car, we're going to the area meeting, right? That was mentorship back then, right? We would tell you, come on, we're going for a ride. It's gonna be all day, but and you're gonna have fun in the middle of it, and we might stop and get a hamburger somewhere. And that was creative action, even at that, in the beginning of that journey, right? And today, how do we do that today? So I find it exciting when I'm in that space, when I'm doing that. I remember thinking when they elected me for the booster club president at my son's high school. I'm not doing any service, right? I'm raising my boy. I'm trying to be there, make sure that he's not getting any little girls pregnant or anything like that, right? And he's become a good citizen, and he's doing great stuff at school, and he's a good athlete, and I'm gonna pour into him, man. And I remember them electing me and thinking, what am I gonna do? How am I gonna do this? I didn't say earlier, I got no education, man. I got a penitentiary GED that I caught, that I got in the penitentiary. And so I think, oh, I'll just be the GSR of the group. That's all. I'll do just like what I learned in service. And that's exactly what I did. Everything that I learned in service, I applied it out there, and it worked. It worked. By the end of that season, we had two sets of outfits, two uniforms, we had the little churches donating biscuits to us, and it was great, man. But that's just an example of how that worked for me, how that worked for me at that space, in that time.
That's cool that you mentioned that. That reminds me of a story. We were at work and they were wanting to have all these head of departments wanted to come together and have a meeting to try to keep everybody to bring about some more effective communication throughout the company. And what was funny is when we got in there, people were like, "Well, how do we have this sort of meeting?" And I got to thinking, I was like, "Well, I do this all the time." So I said, "I'll make us a format." And they're like, "How do you know how to make a format?" I said, "Just trust me. I'll put a format together and then You all can tell me whether you like it or not. And I just put together a regular business meeting format that we would have at our home group. I just changed a few things that would apply to the company rather than the fellowship, and it worked perfect. We're still doing it today, still following the same format. And
That's beautiful.
it's cool how you get to take that stuff from what you learn in service in NA. Who would have ever knew? I thought I was just coming to stop using. I never knew that I would learn not only spiritual principles to practice, but life skills too. I learned a lot of life skills here and team building and stuff.
Yeah, I think that like it says, we practice these principles in all our affairs. Is like the practice that we have in Narcotics Anonymous is so that we can be of service outside of Narcotics Anonymous. It's the like it's the stuff that allows us to participate in our families' lives, like in our communities' lives. Just that much faster we become responsible, productive members of our society. Like that's really when the rubber hits the road, is like when we get to practice these principles with people outside of NA.
Yeah. You think about it like, say you're in a position at your job, and maybe you're in a role to where you do some training and you sponsor people. I mean, it's the same concepts. You've done the job before, and you're just going to walk them through, share your experience with them, and walk them through how to do the job. You can take those same principles that you learn from what your sponsor taught you to what you're now doing with your sponsees. You can do that as. It is like on-job training for a person that you're training in to take a position that you've already had. It's so cool how it translates over into our real life, you know. Yep.
Yeah, great stuff.
Hey, Ruben, so I want to ask you this. You've been clean 32 years, and congratulations on recently celebrating your clean time.
Thank you.
It's awesome. So in 32 years, it's hard to go through 32 years and not have some struggles and some ups and downs, and life has probably showed up a few times. Is there anything, when I say that, is there anything that sticks out, a situation that was really difficult that you had to overcome? And would you be willing to share that with us and talk about how you got through it?
Yeah, love has always been the one that I have struggled with over my years of clean time, and finding a partner, falling in love, and those that experience. And there were some years ago where I fell in love with a girl out of Tennessee, as a matter of fact. And there's something about when they sing Rocky Top to you that's something goes off. Only people from Tennessee would know
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I am so happy that I heard somebody bring up Rocky Top. Thank you.
that was all it took, and I was butter, melted butter. Anyway, yeah, that was a struggle, man. It was hard to do. It was difficult. It was the most trying time in my recovery, man. And I had to seek outside help, and I was able to get through it pretty much. It was difficult, but I had learned a lot from it. I had learned so much from it. And the application of the steps, the traditions, the sponsorship, my sponsor having had ha him having had gone through something similar to that, and saying, "Here, you need to call this guy, and this guy's going to help you." And that being open-minded enough to accept that from somebody else, and in the recovery process, that was a bit, that has been the most trying time for me lately. Lately, I find myself in a space where, so I just turned 65, and I'm, I signed up for Medicaid, Medicare the other day, and that was, oh man. The time came when I thought, "Oh, I'm here now, man. I'm here, and I'm not ready to retire, but it sure seems like it right now." I work for myself. I own a small business. I own my own business that I've been doing practically the whole time I've been clean. Now, again, that's one of those things that the higher power at work this had did what it the higher power does, right? I needed to do that work for myself so that I could care for my son, so I could pick him up in the afternoon, so I could, do what I needed to do with him, man. And so as a result of that, I've shut down my shop. I'm downsizing now. I'm coming to, it feels almost like coming to a different season in my life. And so it's been difficult. That has been the most difficult thing for me, man. I seem to do pretty good in everything else. I seem to do pretty good. So, people always say, oh, the right one's going to come, blah, 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 how they tell you until it's their turn. And everybody gets a turn, right? And so, for us guys in NA, as we grow, as we mature, it becomes different, man. And so I'm trying to figure that out now today. Yeah. Great journey. I mean, I love every minute of it. I get to travel. I'm doing all of those things that I've not been able to do, is raising a single, being a single parent. After I got him through college, I got him off to college and my son, and it was like being a newcomer all over again, going to five meetings a week again, doing all that stuff, man, and dating. Oh my God, it had changed, and it's still changing, So it's difficult, man. That's the tough part for me.
I'm sorry, this is what I took away from that. You said you were 65. I was thinking, what a handsome fella for 65 years old.
Thank you.
You talk about aging well, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I try. I try to eat right. I try to do those things that we are taught in the program, man. I quit smoking 25 years ago. And so that has been one of those things, man, that has helped me. I believe that has helped me, man. And I try to stay fit. I'm active. I try not to slow down. And yeah. So yeah.
I think there's a piece around staying busy. Like I quit smoking at Y2K. Like that seemed like a good day to quit, and I think that that's allowed me a little bit of longevity. I do have like I recently got a scan of my lungs, and there's some scarring on my lungs, and I'm like, thank God it's just scarring. It's not just cigarettes I smoked. I smoked everything in my addiction. Like anything I could smoke, I'll smoke. Even if it didn't get me high, I'd try it. So like I'm grateful for my health. And I think God leading me into, quitting. Like that, I didn't pray. Like I didn't ask God to remove like I didn't have a foxhole prayer. Like it was kind of a process of me getting into NA, but I'll tell you what, I was pretty powerless over nicotine, and I got on my knees for that one, and it was removed. And so that, like, I think that prayer is pretty powerful. But not that I'm as good looking as Ruben, but
Thank
I
you.
am.
Thank
I
you.
am grateful for like to be able to have some time in the program and to be healthy at my age. So,
What's our guest we had on from Oakland?
that was
Daryl.
Daryl
Daryl
F.
would argue. He constantly told you were a good-looking fella.
He did. He told me I looked like Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, he said. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Francis asked me about some of the other history, man. That experience with George was really real powerful for me, as a man in recovery. He helped me with some things. There's a sentence that still rings true that I hear him tell me each time that I grab Oreo cookies. Or something that's not good.
Big
He
Mac.
said to me one day, he said, Ruben, it's not that you lack the willingness. He said, you just lack discipline. And I was like, okay, George. I wanted to kick him out of my car at the moment. And I was like, one of those things that they're old timers when they tell you good stuff, man. That first it rings in your spirit, right? And then you're like, who's this old guy talking to, man? And George had a lot of those, man, over the years. Francis asked me to kind of talk about that. I want to lead into that segue if you guys are okay with
Yeah,
that.
go ahead.
I know it's kind of, we jumped around a little bit, but very special time, man. He was an incredible friend. There was a day that we were at the meeting. They started to come to my home group, and I would go to their home group. My home group meets on Tuesday night, so tonight is my home group at 7:30 in South Austin, and their home group would meet Friday night. So George, I would go to their home group just so I could hang out with George, and I'd sit next to George, and after the meeting, he'd make his way out to the car, and she would park the car up kind of by the front door so that he could sit in the car. Remember, he was paralyzed from half of his body, but so he could sit in the car, roll his window down, and we'd all kind of gather around him and talk. And that was our space to cut it up with him, man. And I remember one day he said, and his wife was walked away, and he said to me, "Hey, man, I want to be the delegate again." And I said, he said, "Will you help me?" He said, "Will you be my legs?" And I said, "Of course, man. Of course I'll help you. Yes." He said, "But do me a favor." He said, "Don't tell my wife. I haven't told her yet." I was like, "Okay, George." So a couple of weeks later, man, she came to my home group, and he was with her. They came over to the meeting, and she pulled me aside, and she said to me, "You gonna take care of him?" And I said, "Of course I will." She said, "Okay, he wants to do the delegate thing again, but I need to know that you're gonna take care of him." And I said, "Of course I will." And by then we had talked about different stuff, man. And so there was two guys that were the RCMs from our area, and we would travel to the regional meetings, and we would all travel together in the same vehicle each time that we went to a regional meeting. So I'm being his legs, right? We went to the regional meeting the first time, and I said, "George, tell us about the what was your most incredible experience that you had?" And he said, "There were many of them." He said, "But me and Bobby Raymar was his sponsor also." And he said, "Me and Bobby were asked to speak at Bobby was asked to speak at an AA convention in New York City, and we traveled there together." And I was like, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, it was Shea Stadium. We were in Shea Stadium when this happened." And I was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Wow, for real?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "We traveled there, and we got to do that." And I was like, "That's incredible." He said, "There were many, many other times that we had experiences like that. That South America was big for him, man. He helped develop South America, the fellowship there. He was very instrumental in doing some of that. The concepts was kind of like he was very instrumental in that and helping put that together. He loved to talk about service, man. He would tell us the stories, man. We would, get him a cup of coffee, man, and we'd drive. We'd drive. Like I said, the regional meetings are far for us, man. Each way is 3 hours at least, So we had time to talk about those experiences and sharing with him, man. Love those experiences. I'll tell you, one of the times that I really realized what was going to happen, and that was we went to the Multizonal Symposium, the first one that was held in St. Louis, and we flew there, and I went to pick him up to go to the airport, and she had a list of things that I needed to do. And it was all laid out, printed, and everything. There were two copies of it. She had it. She worked at the office, so that's how they met, right? So she worked at the office with him, and later they married. And so I had this list and all his stuff laid out. And she said, "Now you got to do this. It's important that you do this." And I said, "Of course, of course." So we get there. We get there on Friday, and that experience was really incredible, man. I had not prepared myself for what that was going to be. And so he had to change, and I had to change him. He wore special socks that were compression socks so his feet wouldn't swell up. And I had to change his socks and put on his compression socks. Now, for an egotistical, man like myself, to humbly do that with great care and pride was like, "Oh yeah, man, here's the amends that I owe to my dad, that I get to live it through this man." For a moment in that time, the quiet came, man. And I knew that that was God's will. I knew that I was lining up to God's will at that moment, because it gave me two things to do: be there for George and to make my amends to my dad. And that's how I looked at it each time, man, not knowing what was going to happen. We got him, we got him, we went, we walked into the meeting. They were holding the first meeting, and it was the history that Boyd and Chris, I believe, was the first time that they were doing. And we pulled in. I'm rolling them in the wheelchair, and we pull in and we sit in the back. And we're in the back, man. And they're doing the history, and we listened to the history. And George was tired. He said, "Let's go to my, take me to my room, man." And I took him back to his room, and I got him situated. I put a C cap. I changed his pants, man. Took off his pants and, put on his sweats, change his socks, man. And I said, "Man, I knew that I was, that's what I was supposed to be doing in that moment. In that moment in time, I was where my feet were supposed to be. And I was present every walk of the way. I had to care for him." Got to bed, and yeah, I went out, man. I said, "All right, man, I'll be back in a little bit." It was still kind of early for me. It's like 10 o'clock for me, and 10 or 11. And I went out, and Boyd and Chris said, "Hey, man, I want to talk to you." And I was like, "Yeah." They said, "You think we can talk to George?" And I said, "Oh, he's in bed." He said, "No, we want to buy you breakfast tomorrow morning, if you guys are willing to come to breakfast with us." And I said, I'll ask him, man. I'm sure he would love to, man. I knew George. He loved to talk about the history. He loved to talk about Narcotics Anonymous. That was his love. You can imagine being the World Service Conference chair, the World Service Conference director. I mean, the director of NAS, man. You know, the director of Narcotics Anonymous. And that experience, I can only imagine what that would have been like. And him not being able to talk about that hardly anymore, except to the guys that he was, that we were talking to, right? Who he was talking to, sharing with us. So that morning we got up and got him over there, and we went to the, and Chris and Boyd were waiting on us, man. And they began to talk, and they began to talk. They ended up switching the tables and the setting from breakfast all the way to lunch before we even got out of there. It was like 1 o'clock, man, 12:30, 1 o'clock, something like that, before we even got out of there. Great time, man. You know, I said, at one point, I'm sitting there and I'm listening and I'm kind of not just kind of being a fly on the wall, man. It was great. The questions that the guys were asking, the content that they were searching for, and what George knew. There was pieces that he knew that were missing from the things that they had gathered. At one point, I said, "So, Ray, you showed a Hispanic woman on the screen," and I said, "That's." He said, "Yeah, that was Ray Lopez." And I said, "She was probably the first Hispanic in NA, huh?" And he looked at me. I remember Chris looking at me and going, "You might be right about that, man." I said, "I could tell, even though it was a black and white, you could tell she had big red lips and her hair was puffy. You know, man, we got that look, man." And she was a Puerto Rican, man. Her name was Ray Lopez. But anyway, man, sidebar of that. But that was my experience with that experience that time and that whole weekend, and how much love he received from the fellowship. That I had not realized the magnitude of how he what he had done for the fellowship. I knew who he was. I saw what he did, but not really realizing I was able to touch it, because everybody wanted to hug him. Everybody wanted to be next to him. Everybody wanted to say hello to him, man. We couldn't walk 5 paces, and I had to stop and, you know, he'd hug somebody, share with somebody, talk with somebody. It was beautiful, beautiful experience, man. We later went to the World Service Conference, and him and I and his wife, we made sure that we tag teamed. So the office got us a nice big room, and we had a nice big room that we shared. And you know, I had a little cot on the side of the room, man, and great experience to be with him at the World Service Conference. And remember, man, he had a stroke, so he could only go so long, and he had to rest. He could only do so much, and he had to rest. He wasn't 100%, man. I talked to his wife the other day, and I wanted to be sure when this was coming up that I wanted to speak to her and share with her what I was about to do. And she was like, "Ruben, you have nothing but my respect." And she said, "You had been there with him. You had done all these things with him. You it, yes, by all means, share, talk about him, tell the story of your experience with him." She was most admirable about doing that, and she gave me a. We had a guy had came to speak here in Austin. It was at an event. It was our Christmas H&I book drive. And they brought him in from upstate New York, man. Guy by the name of Tommy O. And he came to share, and his wife was on the board. She's still on the board. And his wife told him, "That's where George lives. If you can, go talk to George, because he loves a history too." And I went to the event, and he picked me out, and he said, "Hey, man, I want to talk to you." This is a big old guy. He's like 6'6", man. And I said, "Oh, okay, you must be the speaker," because he was the only other person like you talked about, Francis, that was not, you know, from around here. I could tell. I said, "Oh, he's the speaker." So he said, "Hey, man, you think we can go see George?" And I said, "Let me give him a call. He might be here tonight." And it was cold that night, and I called Mary, and Mary said, "Nah, George is it's too cold for him to come out, man." She goes, "But I'm sure that he would love for you guys to come over." And I told Tommy that, and so Tommy and I went over after he spoke, and we went over, and he talked. He pulled history. He took pictures. He talked about some stuff. He pulled out some old stuff that he had, some history, some, you know, literature, different other things that he had in his stash that he had. And we sat and we talked for a couple of hours. And George had a slump on his face to one side from the stroke. And we took pictures, and I swear to God that slump almost straightened out in his smile that evening. He was so excited He was so excited. It was so much fun, you could tell. He passed away 4 days later, man. Yeah, 4 days later, he passed away. So it was probably the last time that he got to cut it up with any guys, man. And she brought me a ring, man, that he got from the guys in South America when he went to do some fellowship development in South America. They made him a NA silver ring. And she said, I want you to have this. And I usually wear it when I do service, man. I wear my NA service ring that George was given to George, man. It's the only thing I have of his, man, that I cherish and honor. That experience over and over, man. It's a great gift for me to learn from that man, to listen to him. Intelligent, man. Just intelligent, man. He thought differently. He that creative thinking, man, that he possessed. You know, he told me stories about him and Bob Stone that was like, wow, for real, for real. And yeah, him and Mary and Bob Stone, you know, they spent time together before Bob Stone passed away. Like they spent a week together before Bob Stone passed away. He was in their house, and then he went and did what he did. Yeah. Pretty incredible, man. I finally got to tell the inside of that, man. And you know, again, I'm honored. I'm honored to be able to share that with you guys, because you know, sometimes I touch on it when I share, man. Because I think it's important, man. It's important that we talk about the old timers, the creators, the creative action that they possess, the spirit that they possess. And George was able to give me that. I believe that I got that from him and men like him that have touched my life over and over and over again, man. So I believe that it's my duty, that it's my duty and honor that I get to talk about that, man. And today you have given me that platform to be able to do that in detail about some of those experiences, man. And I'm grateful to you guys, man. I'm grateful to you guys again. The quiet. I can sense the quiet right here in this moment, in this space, at this time. Now.
Well, I think I can speak for Francis and I both when we say the honor is all ours. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. What an incredible story. What an incredible person George was. What an incredible person you are, Reuben. And how blessed you must feel to have had that last visit with George and to share what very well could have been his last in a moment and sharing that with people. How awesome that must have been. And yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for telling the story. You know, like the story needs to be told. It kind of keeps George alive too, like in the memory of Narcotics Anonymous.
Beautiful.
No doubt, gentlemen. No doubt, man. That was a great time. It's been a great time, man. Narcotics Anonymous has given me so much. I'm blessed beyond any measure, man, that I could ever pay back. The gift that you guys have given me, that the fellowship had given me, continues to provide for me, man. Like I said, I'm in a different space in my life, man. And I often wonder, how did I get here? How did the higher power bring me here to this place, to this spot? And there are times when I have prayed for that exact moment, man, that I have prayed it some kind of way, something, right? And man, I get overwhelmed at times, man. The words leave me. I don't know that I have enough vocabulary to describe the magnitude of that experience that I feel inside my spirit that I try to carry with me. And I'm like anybody else, man. You know, let somebody cut me off in traffic on a bad day, and I do the same thing, man, that you probably do, maybe. I don't know. You know, but for the most part, man, I try not to. And I try to do my best to live the program because I know somebody's watching. I know somebody's watching. And today we're trying to change that perception that we are a viable program. We are alive and well, and we can help people. And that tired or lie will no longer be tolerated, not only by society, but the addict himself, man. We cannot be, the hot topics today are predatory behavior and disruptive predatory behavior. All of those things that are in our forefront right now, we have to change. We gotta be creative in the way that we do that, man. How do we become creative in the action of that spirit and what that spirit means for the fellowship, man? Because I believe that this is our next a road to hoe, if you will, right? This is our next assignment, right? To create that space, man, to welcome everybody to experience what we experience, the gifts that you guys experience each time that you do this. I know that's why you do this, because you get a gift too, man. And the fact that's creative action at its best, man. And each of us possesses that. Like I was talking about earlier, we all possess that. It's getting us to understand that is available to me. The fellowship, our literature speaks to that, man. That the process of that the awakening of the steps and the process of the steps and the awakening, it talks about a spiritual awakening, and it's in the spirit that we are awakened. That's the most powerful thing that we have here, is the spiritual awakening.
I hear you tell that story about George and the passion that you shared with it. You can just tell how big of an influence that George had on you. But what I think about is now you are getting to be George for somebody else. And someday somebody's going to share about Reuben the way that you share about George. And I just think that is so cool. And that's like the gift that George leaves with you, right? Like you have that example of how to be that for somebody else, and what an honor and a privilege that is. And you may not think about it that way, but that's usually how those things work, and I know that because of that influence that you're able to carry that on to others too. And that's what I think about. And I can't thank you enough for spending this time with us in the middle of the week to get this episode in. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and we appreciate you.
Great honor. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for the gift. Thank you for the gift. I'm forever grateful to you guys and this experience.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Okay, folks, that's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode. See you then.
Thank you for joining us on our Living Clean podcast. This is another platform that we can share our message of recovery, which is an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Join that no matter what club. You can contact us through text. The number is 931-306-9364.